Good afternoon. My name is Owen Egan, and I am the chairman of the Freedom of Information Commission. This is the commission's regular meeting of May 22nd, 2024. The public may listen to the meeting in real time by following the instructions listed at the top of the commission's meeting agenda currently posted on the commission's website. In addition, this meeting is being recorded in its entirety. For the benefit of the public, particularly those who may be listening to the meeting by telephone, I'll take a roll call so that the record reflects who is participating today. When I say your name, please indicate you are present. Commissioner Barry, Commissioner Einhorn, Commissioner Farish,
here.
Commissioner Fuseschi,
here.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells, Commissioner Ganswin, Mr. Hankins,
here.
Mr. Streeter,
here.
And myself, Chairman Owen Egan, here. Similarly, when the commission conducts a vote, it will be by roll. The first item is consideration of the minutes of the commission's regular meeting of May 8th, 2024. Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I move adoption of the minutes of the regular meeting of May 8th, 2024 for adoption.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. I'll conduct a roll of those in favor. Mr. Farish?
Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next, we will consider the hearing officer's reports. I will call the docket. If you wish to address the commission on a particular docket number, please let me know when I call it. We will mark it ready. We will take up the cases in the order that they are called. First is docket number FIC 2023-0265, James Mitchell versus Angel Quiros, Commissioner, State of Connecticut Department of Correction, et al. Yes. Are you, just identify yourself.
I'll go first. Jennifer Lepore for the respondents.
Thank you, Attorney Lepore. Is Mr. Mitchell there, please?
Yes. James Mitchell. I am the complainant.
Would you like to be heard on this matter?
I just would like to say that after reviewing the hearings officer report, I'm not in any objection. I agree. I think she did a thorough job. I just wanted to put that on record.
Okay. Thank you. Attorney Lepore, do you wish to be heard on this matter?
No, I just would urge adoption. Thank you.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Streeter, seeing that neither the respondent nor the complainant object to the hearing officer's report, I move adoption.
Mr. Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0294, Gerardo Torres versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Good afternoon. Dean Scalo here, Office of the City Attorney for the respondents, and I'd like to be here, please.
Mr. Torres, are you there, please? Okay. Thank you. We'll mark that ready. Mr. Mitchell, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still there.
Okay. You're welcome to listen in, but you can hang up if you'd like.
The last thing I heard was some type of objection. Am I hearing wrong?
No, they didn't. No one objected. It passed unanimously.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Y'all have a good day.
All right. Have a great day.
All right.
Thank you. All right. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0477, Brian Abbott versus Director, Health Department, Town of Trumbull, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? That matter was withdrawn. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, this was withdrawn and dismissed. I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Harsh?
Yes.
Mr. Fuseschi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0499, Tim Riley versus Chief Willimantic Police Department, Town of Windham, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
This one, Mr. Chairman, the hearing officer withdrew the report. She has decided to reopen the matter based upon a motion filed by the complainant.
Okay.
So
do we pass? Do we just pass that or?
Yes.
Okay. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0263. Jermaine Rogers versus Office of the City Attorney, City of Bridgeport, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Good afternoon, Dean Scalo for the City of Bridgeport. I'd like to be heard very briefly.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here on that matter? Okay, we'll mark that ready, Attorney Scalo. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0276, Lynn Harrington versus Director, Park and Recreation Department, Town of Kent, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Is Lynn Harrington there? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, seeing neither parties here, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hackett, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes, passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0277, Thomas Egan versus Comptroller, Office of the Comptroller, City of Ansonia et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Thomas Egan, I'm here. Objection.
No objection.
Okay.
Anybody here for the comptroller? I'd entertain a motion.
Yes, Mr. Thank Chairman. You. Commissioner Streeter, seeing no objection to the complainant, the respondent's not here, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0471, Thomas Egan versus Kurt Miller, Comptroller, Finance Department, City of Ansonia et al. Mr. Egan?
No complaint here. Okay. With the commissioner or the findings of the, in the report that can be made from the commission.
You agree with the?
I agree.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is anyone here from the town of Ansonia? I'd entertain a motion, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, again, the complaint has no objection. There's no respondent here to object, so I move it up to the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes, passes unanimously. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0291, Luz E. Bueno versus Chair, Advisory Committee on Sustainability, Town of Darien et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? Would you like to be heard?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Attorney Fox for the response. We have no objection.
Attorney Fox?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. We'll mark it ready. Oh, both have no objection? Ms. Bueno, you would like to be heard, right?
I would like to be heard.
Yes. Okay. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0311, Alco Renewable Energy Limited versus Town Clerk, Town of Summers et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
This one, Mr. Chairman, I think the hearing officer just has a proposed amendment.
Mr. Chairman, commissioners, I do have...
Just identify yourself.
Oh, sorry, Attorney Zach Hyde, I was hearing officer on this matter. I do have an amendment on non-substantive matter. In the hearing officer report on page 5, paragraph 26, the end of the sentence there reads, consists entirely of a lease agreement between the respondent town and a third party and attached land records. I want to remove the quote, the respondent town and a third party, and instead put two third-party entities. So the sentence would now read, based upon a careful inspection of the in-camera records identified in paragraph 25 above, it is found that the records claim to be exempt from disclosure pursuant to section 1-210B5, subsection B, consists entirely of a lease agreement between two third-party entities and attached land records.
Thank you. Can I entertain a motion regarding the amendment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, I will move that we amend paragraph 26 with the language that the hearing officer proposed.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Is there discussion regarding the amendment? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call in favor of the amendment only. Mr. Farish?
Yes.
Mr. Fuzeci?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Mr. Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. The amendment passes unanimously. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the amended hearing officer's report. Commissioner Street.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Commissioner Goldsby, that's our attendance for the record.
Thank you, Commissioner Goldsby Wells. All right, so we have a motion. It was seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'm going to take a roll call of those in favor of passing the amended decision in the matter ending 0311, Alco Renewable Energy Limited versus Town Clerk, Town of Somers, et al. So is there any discussion on that? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes, passes unanimously. Thank you. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0338, Michael Spilo versus Chair, Central Middle School Building Committee, Greenwich Public Schools, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Attorney Andrew McPherson for the respondents. I'd like to be heard.
You would like to be heard?
Thank you.
Andrew McPherson?
Yes.
We'll mark that ready, Attorney McPherson. All right. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0352, Benjamin Lipp versus Director of Public Records, State of Connecticut, University of Connecticut, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Ralph Urban from the UConn General Counsel's Office. I don't need to be heard unless Mr. Lipp wants to be heard.
Is Mr. Lipp here? Thank you, Attorney Urban. I entertain a motion on that matter.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Streeter, seeing that the complaint is not here and there's no objection to the respondent, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeci?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you, counsel. Next is docket number FIC 2023-0356-1, Areola. Diane Gagnon and John Russell versus Chair, Board of Education, Hampton Public Schools, et al. Is there anyone here on that matter?
Here.
Ready.
Yes. So, I'm sorry, your name is, sir?
Juan Arriola.
Okay.
I also filed a motion to argue as amicus for Cave and Caps in this matter, and I was informed that the commission would decide today whether I would be permitted to do so.
Thank you, Attorney Mooney. Yes, we will decide that today. Mr. Areola is here. Is Diane Gagnon here? Is John Russell here? And then, so you are? No.
I'm Attorney Abby Boofin here, also on behalf of the respondents.
How do you spell your last name?
B-O-O-T-H.
B as in boy?
B as in boy.
O-O-T-H. Booth, thank you. And you represent the respondents. Thank you. So we're going to mark that ready. All right. Thank you. Before we consider these cases, I will ask the Executive Director, Colleen Murphy, to please make the usual announcements.
Sure. As indicated by the chairman, these proceedings are being recorded in their entirety. There's no need to request a recording. The recording will be made available on our website very soon after this meeting. If anyone has trouble accessing that, just let us know and we'll make sure you can get to it. And second, pursuant to our regulations, oral arguments, 10 minutes per side. I'll keep track of that for the parties.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I was just going to ask Commissioner Goldsby Wells if she would like to vote in favor or if she would like to vote at all on the matters that were adopted prior to her arriving, including the minutes.
Yes, I vote in favor of the meeting minutes from May 8th, 2024. And then I vote in favor of docket number FIC 2023-0265. I vote in favor of FIC 2023-0477. I vote in favor of DACA number FIC 2023-0276. I vote in favor of FIC 2023-0471. And the other one, FIC 2023-0277. In favor of FIC 2023-0311. And in favor of FIC 2023-0352.
I hope our secretary kept just as good record as you did of what we voted on. That was impressive.
Okay.
Did she miss some?
Pressure's on you, Russ.
You got them all.
I think she got them all.
One would include the amendment.
Well, she voted on that.
I voted on it before.
All right. Very good, thank you. So first matter is FIC 2023-0294, Gerardo Torres versus Chief Police Department, City of Bridgeport et al. Is Mr. Torres there?
Mr. Torres is not participating.
He was represented by counsel, and I think counsel filed a letter.
Okay. All right, Attorney Scalo, please identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Dina Scalo, Office of the City Attorney for the City of Bridgeport. I was counsel for the respondents in this matter.
Thank you.
In the interest of brevity, I won't go through the entire factual background of this case, but the underlying request here is paragraph 2 on the first page. It was a request that was filed with the Bridgeport Police Department, and essentially it was looking for really all records concerning the investigation into the shooting death of William Giusti in 1991. And Mr. Torres was arrested and convicted in connection with that investigation. Records were ultimately produced to Mr. Torres's counsel electronically, free of charge. And so really the dispute boiled down to contesting largely most of the redactions that were made, the claims of exemption, and the promptness issue. So just to sort of put on the record before we get into it, the respondents agree with many of the findings of the hearing officer in this case, particularly with respect to many of the claims of exemption that were raised by the respondents that were found to have merit and were found to be applicable to the records. But primarily we have objections with the findings of fact that the respondents didn't meet their burden of proof with respect to exemptions claimed under 1210B3A, which pertains to unknown witnesses and informants, as well as we would disagree with the conclusions with respect to finding that the respondents violated the promptness provisions of the FOI Act. So just to back up a little bit, the respondents appeared at the hearing, both hearings, with a witness, Mr. Jordan Francis, who is a typist who works in the records division of the Bridgeport Police Department. He conducted the review and the redaction of the records. He provided a lot of testimony about the number of records, which was in the neighborhood of about 550 pages, that he had scanned them all in, redacted them. He had actually produced some of the records more than once. There were a lot of duplicates, but all of the records really needed to be redacted and reviewed. He provided a lot of evidence in terms of how long it took him to redact and go through all of the records. And a lot of this information is in the proposed final decision. But there were some issues where some of the evidence didn't make its way into the proposed final decision that are probative if we're looking at the advisory opinion number 51 talking about promptness. So specifically, the hearing officer's report talks about how there was no explanation with respect to the delay between locating the records and scanning them in and ultimately producing them to the complainant's counsel. And we would disagree with that. The evidence in the record clearly talks about how long it took to kind of go through all of the pages, that it wasn't just in one sitting, that it was in multiple sort of settings throughout that time period. Additionally, there was evidence in the record concerning the number of other requests for which Mr. Francis was responsible for. I believe he testified that he was responsible for about 30 to 50 other requests a week that would come in at the Bridgeport Police Department. There was testimony regarding the staffing setup in the records division in the police department and how really largely the written requests were handled by Mr. Francis with the assistance of some of the other folks in the records division. And that each of
of those 30 to 50 other requests which come in, which could be either in writing or folks coming to the front window at the records division at the police department, each of those independently requires their own search and review. And, you know, collectively, that's the evidence as to what really contributed to the delay between actually locating the records and producing the records to the complainant's counsel. So we would submit that that's important evidence that should have, at the very least, have been considered, and it appears to have been mentioned, but not substantively really engaged with in the promptness analysis. So, and then not just that, there was a lot of evidence in the record which discussed, like I said, the nature of the case file, which, like I said, was a homicide file from 1991, so we're bordering on, you know, about 30 years old. The time that it took to search for those records, like I said, scan them in, redact them, and all of that contributed to the delay. And also there is, I believe, a very brief mention, but there was quite a bit of time spent in the administrative record talking about some of the steps and measures that the police department and the city of Bridgeport have taken since March of last year, 2023, to ameliorate what may have contributed to the delay in producing records. So there was some discussion about a new FOI program that was implemented in the city of Bridgeport, which basically spread out the task of compiling and reviewing and disclosing records to numerous liaisons throughout the city of Bridgeport, rather than it just being centered in one person at the office of the city attorney. And the timeline with which that program was implemented, like I said, was in March of 2023, which was shortly before the request in this case was filed, which is in May of 2023. So really, the program and how it was kind of in its early stages and the training that was conducted, that also plays into the promptness analysis, too. So we would submit that that's all important evidentiary information that may have turned the tide on the hearing officer's ultimate conclusion that the records were not produced promptly. But I think even just considering the information in the proposed final decision, there's a lot of information there about the volume of records requested. I don't believe the record contained any information about the timeline by which the requester needed the records. It's a fact-based analysis, and we would submit that the facts weigh in favor of perhaps not finding that the disclosure was prompt in our sort of ordinary sense, but finding that given the facts and circumstances, the timeline of disclosure didn't violate the FOI Act in terms of the promptness. So that sort of takes care of that. With respect to the claims of exemption, I'm probably going to make a lot of arguments that this body has heard me make before, but I think they're all important. With respect to records that were claimed as exempt pursuant to 1210b3a, which has to do with witnesses and informants who are not otherwise known, and if their identity was publicly disclosed, that there's a risk that they could be subject to harm, intimidation, or threat. So just on its face, we're talking about a 1991 homicide investigation. The victim was a child in this case. And just in order to prove the exemptions and claim them accurately and consistently, Mr. Francis testified about the research that he conducted, which is really, it has to occur given the age of the records. The folks who were part of the investigation or who would have a lot of the substantive knowledge about what went on in the investigation have long since retired or perhaps even are deceased. So in order to really intelligently speak to what material was redacted and what was not redacted, it does require research. This is not information that is kind of naturally occurring in the modern day staff of the police department. But that being said, just because research had to be conducted in order to make these claims doesn't necessarily mean that the claims don't have as much merit as they would if you had somebody who actually authored the reports. Really, a lot of these calls require reading the documents. A lot of these calls are informed by the contents of the documents, and that's really important in this case. Mr. Francis provided a lot of testimony concerning doing Google searches, looking at materials pertaining to the underlying criminal case, and trying to differentiate who testified at trial, who did not, who was publicly available in newspaper articles or through a Google search, who was not, and was able to conclude knowledgeably that some individuals were known publicly and their information was not redacted. The information that was redacted, so these are names and other types of identifiers, narratives that could identify a person, the information that remained redacted was information that Mr. Francis was not able to determine was publicly available. And really, there's some discussion in the proposed final decision about a rebuttable presumption and that the respondents may have referenced on the record that there was no information to rebut the presumption that these individuals were not otherwise known, and the hearing officer sort of tamps down on that and says, well, it's not their obligation to rebut your claims of exemption. And we totally acknowledge that claiming exemptions is the responsibility of the public agency. But the commission has in the past acknowledged that in the absence of evidence which rebuts a claim, that is probative. It may not be entirely the straw that hinges the determination. But given the identity of the requester as counsel for Mr. Torres, who had access to presumably trial materials and materials pertaining to the underlying criminal case, it's noteworthy that Mr. Torres's counsel did not provide a witness list or any kind of trial information to say, hey, no, it looks like this person was publicly available. So your claim as to this individual didn't have merit. That didn't occur in this case. So we would say that there are actually some cases, I believe one of which is at issue today, 2023-0311, in which the hearing officer actually makes note of the fact that the complainant didn't provide evidence to rebut a presumption. So that had to do with attorney-client privilege, but we would note that it's the same kind of evaluation when it comes to factually proving an exemption to disclosure. With respect to proving that these witnesses, that there's a risk of harm or threat or intimidation, there's some discussion in the hearing officer's report as to the appellate decision that recently was issued involving the city of Bridgeport. And basically, the hearing officer concludes that the testimony from Mr. Francis, which talked about, yes, in reading the records, we really do believe that if these individuals' identities were made known, that there could be a risk of threat or harm or intimidation or harassment. The hearing officer concluded that those were basically generalized statements and didn't weigh them heavily in this case. But the respondents would point out that something very different is applicable in this case as opposed to the appellate decision, which I don't know whether we would necessarily concede all of the characterizations about the evidence in the appellate decision. But in this case, Mr. Francis pointed out, and the hearing officer had access to, records that were submitted for in-camera inspection, which memorialized and documented multiple claims from witnesses that they had trepidation or fear or reluctance, fear of retribution for cooperating with the police in the underlying case. So this is something where there was documented fear that the hearing officer could review for herself. On the face of the records, it establishes that there's a risk of harm in this case. What was particularly troubling, I think, to the respondents is that there's some language in the proposed final decision that says, well, it was only two witnesses that expressed fear or reluctance. We would submit that it cannot be what the legislature intended, that every single witness who expresses that who cooperates with law enforcement has to have it documented that they are anticipating that their cooperation will result in some kind of harm or threat. The preponderance of the evidence is the evidentiary burden here. The respondents have to prove that it's more likely than not that these individuals are not otherwise known, and if their identity was made known, that they would be subject to harm or intimidation. Just the testimony alone from the respondent's witness, we argue, would get us there. But particularly given the face of the records, which really do speak for themselves, the commission has repeatedly found in a lot of different contexts that what you can see on the face of the record, reading the record, can provide a lot of information, and in many instances, you don't even need extrinsic evidence to prove that an exemption applies. So we would submit that that's the case in this case. So overall, really, those are our two main objections with the hearing officer's report. I would be glad to answer any questions. But I think the evidence speaks for itself in this case. I think in some instances, the hearing officer had what she needed in order to come out the other way, and for whatever reason, didn't weigh the evidence as we would have. So thank you very much. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any of the commissioners have any questions? Yes.
I feel that the city of Bridgeport's made some compelling arguments here. I think that at least with the promptness provision, I mean, we're talking about a 33-year-old case. A lot of these records they have, obviously it's pre-digital, so they have to scan it. I think the fact that it, you know, the time of, it's my understanding that this, you know, may not necessarily be a promptness violation if I were to waive that. I don't have the hearing officers here. You can answer questions on that. I don't have any at this time. But it sounds like that, you know, if they had come and they hadn't presented any testimony and didn't have a reaction, but the fact is that it sounds like that, you know, getting the records in what I would consider a reasonable amount of time. So I don't necessarily think that there's a promptness violation.
Okay, thank you.
And the second argument on the, I guess the only thing I guess I have a question on for the hearing officer, which is the other finding about the witness statements. And, you know, there's a claim of witness statements that are 30 years old. Maybe just give me a brief explanation of how you came up on that side of the dot.
Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner Streeter. Attorney Smith.
Thank you, Mary Kate Smith. I was the hearing officer in this matter. I might do the reverse and take up the 1-210B3A. That does not require disclosure of records of law enforcement agencies not otherwise available to the public. If it would result in the disclosure of, and it's a twofold test, the identity of informants not otherwise known or the identity of witnesses not otherwise known, and whose safety would be endangered or who would be subject to threat or intimidation if their identity was made known. First of all, it's not a mandatory exemption, and the respondents are required to prove this exemption. And in order for this exemption to apply, there must be evidence that the identity of each witness is unknown. The respondents failed to meet that burden. The respondents instead try to turn it on its head. And they continue to argue that they just assume witnesses are otherwise unknown unless they can find some publicly available information to show that the witnesses' identities were known. That's not the standard. The standard is they have to show that their identities are otherwise unknown. And the appellate court in the City of Bridgeport versus the Freedom of Information flatly rejected the respondent's argument. With respect to this very exception, the appellate court said there is no presumption that the witnesses are otherwise unknown. In its opinion, the Connecticut appellate court quoted Attorney Scalo's argument that the Bridgeport Police Department operates under the assumption that all witnesses are unknown unless given information to the contrary. We don't have access to the prosecutorial information or what happened at trial. That's what the attorney argued. And the appellate court, again, rejected that claim. The court emphasized that the burden of proving an exemption, and this particular exemption, requires the respondents to provide more than conclusory language, generalized allegations, or mere arguments of counsel. So a sufficiently detailed record must reflect the reasons why the exemption applies. In that case, the Bridgeport Police Department and City of Bridgeport relied on a detective's testimony that, based on her knowledge of the case, which was very limited because of the time that had passed, and what was available to the department, she had no reason to believe that the identities of the witnesses are otherwise known. And in this case, the respondent's witness said he did not know the identities of the witnesses who testified at the trials, because there were several defendants, there were multiple trials. And he didn't speak with any detectives or state's attorneys. He didn't provide any evidence to show that the identity. So you'll see in the report, they failed to meet that part of the test that these identities were otherwise unknown. The appellate court said it's their burden to prove that. It's not the burden for the complainant. And it's a very similar testimony. I'm going by the appellate court and what the appellate court said.
So, and therefore, in this case, they failed to prove the applicability of 1-210B3A. The other thing is, when you look at the records, there were at least two witnesses that had testified the other trials of the co-defendants regarding the same exact incident. So those witnesses' identities were known, and those were the ones that raised issues concerning safety. I'm not taking the issue of safety lightly. I'm going by the appellate court's decision and what the burden of proof is here and the testimony that was at the hearing. And in fact, at least two of the witnesses' identities were actually known, and those were not disclosed. So I think Attorney Scala said some of the witnesses' identities were disclosed. I think that's probably true, based on my recollection. I know that there was one or two that were disclosed, but these two particular witnesses that I'm referring to had testified in public at trial regarding the same exact incident were witnesses that were known at the time. So that's why I ruled in that on that.
I appreciate your answer.
With respect to the promptness, I did take into consideration the fact that, you know, I did mention in the report that they received various requests, multiple requests, and that the respondent, I did mention it was about 550 pages, and that, you know, there was only the respondent's witness who testified was primarily responsible for handling these requests. But I listened carefully to the testimony. The testimony was the records request was made on May 16th, 2023, which was after the respondent department implemented their changes. And then the records were provided on February 8th, 2024, which is 8 months and 23 days. 1 to 2 weeks, based on the testimony, the witness said it took him about 1 to 2 weeks before he started looking. And then it took him about a month to locate the records because there were issues with their, you know, archiving system. And he wasn't where he thought it would be, and someone helped him, and then he found it. So that's about 1 month and 2 weeks. And then he explained that the records were in paper format because of the year that they were produced or created. They needed to be scanned in and digitized in order for them to use their electronic redaction software. So that scanning process, he said, took about a week to occur or to complete. And then the respondent's witness said it took him about 2 to 3 months to review and redact the records. He was also clear that he wasn't working on this request for that whole 2 to 3 months. He was doing other things. He described his other duties, but he didn't say it took me 6 months to do the review and the redactions. He said it took me about 2 to 3 months. If you add up all that time, it's about 4 months and 3 weeks. There is no explanation for the other 4 to 5 months in there. And he didn't say it was all these additional months were because of my other duties. And I think when you're talking about 8 months and almost 9 months, and he explained why it took him 5 to 6 months. So even if you say 5 months and 6 months is reasonable, I don't think the 8 months and 23 days is.
Can I disagree?
Okay.
So I did a request. I apologize, Commissioner Streeter. And that's my job. I'm a town administrator. And I have a lot of other jobs, but it took me about 10 months to do a records request that went back from 1800 to the present. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to say that, you know, it was a voluminous request. I'm not saying that this was necessarily voluminous, but you have other jobs. I think that it's a mischaracterization to think that this person's only job was to work on this particular case, and that if it took them, you know, 4 or 5 months or whatever to do that, and that they got the records within 9 months, I find that to be a problem. So that's my own opinion, and because I am a municipal employee, so I take that side. So.
Thank you. Any other commissioners wish to speak?
Mr. Chairman, could I just ask Attorney Scalo, you did not address any arguments to the claim of exemption for moving one. Do you have anything to say with regard to those, or are you?
No, I don't have any objections with respect, Dean Scalo, for the record, with respect to the hearing officer's findings. I think the witness, he couldn't recall at the hearing making those particular redactions, so the hearing officer didn't have evidence as to that fact. So we wouldn't object to the characterization as to that exemption.
Thank you. Thank you. Anything further, Attorney Murphy?
No, thank you.
Any of the other commissioners wish to speak? Commissioner Hankins?
Yeah, tonight, I mean, here we have 30-year-old records and a 9-month delay. I think, you know, proposed decision, I believe, demonstrates a careful weighing of those factors and a number of other factors. And I'm hesitant in this specific case to substitute my judgment for that of the hearing officer. And since it's real close, but I'd have to side with the hearing officer's experience and looking at all this, and I think carefully weighing it, you know, and. You know, and I note also that, you know, some in-camera records were redacted. I mean, it wasn't a total wash of anything. So I think there was a careful sifting of everything.
I'd entertain a motion.
This is Commissioner Hankins. I would make a motion to approve the proposed decision.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Harris?
Yes.
Commissioner Fusashi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goolsbee Wells?
Yes.
Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
No.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. One against, and everyone else in favor. Passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Next is docket number FIC 2023, Jermaine Rogers versus Office of the City of Bridgeport et al.
Hello again.
I want you to turn scale. Long time no see.
I'm well, thank you. My remarks for this one will be, I think, a lot briefer.
I just want to just make sure, is Jermaine Rogers here? Right, thank you, go ahead.
Thank you.
Please.
So again, this was a matter that we had considered, or that the commission had considered, rather, that I had attended on May 8th. And at that time, just to briefly kind of recap what happened at that meeting, the respondents agreed with the overall conclusions concerning the initial hearing officer's report, which considered whether the respondents had violated the commission's order to disclose certain records. But the respondents expressed some concern at the previous hearing concerning some of the language in the proposed final decision, which acknowledged that a key portion of the records which are discussed, which is audio transmissions of unrelated calls for service that are audible on body camera footage, whether those had been appropriately redacted, and to remind the commission, the reason that substantive discussion really hadn't occurred, one of the reasons, in the initial hearing was because there was no in-camera inspection. There was no substantive discussion about the nature of the redaction software at the initial hearing. It just wasn't considered by the hearing officer. The discussion at the initial final decision in that matter didn't really get too far into it. The questions weren't asked, so the information wasn't elicited. The initial proposed final decision, and we kind of teased out at the previous meeting that this was not really the intention of the hearing officer, but it read as though the respondents were not forthright about the nature of the redactions or the schematics of the redaction software. So the commission appeared to agree with our reading of that, the matter was remanded to hearing officer Munn to, I think the word was, soften the language with respect to those findings. So now we have the second report of the hearing officer, which does make a lot of changes, which we do think there are a lot of improvements in terms of the ultimate findings. And just to sort of put on the record clearly, you know, the respondents appreciate the time and consideration of the commission and of hearing officer Munn going back and taking another look and considering our objections. With respect to the second proposed final decision, you know, there is a lot of improvement, but I do think that the language still unintentionally reads as though there was reluctance or obfuscation on the part of the respondents in the first matter with respect to the nature of the redaction of these non-responsive records. And again, you know, rather than sort of finding that it was an issue of first impression that wasn't really considered at length at the initial hearing, particularly, I think the language in paragraph number 21, which says the commission notes that the respondents acknowledged for the first time that when the conversations, and it goes on, the reading of that certainly to the respondents comes out as saying, well, the respondents only put forward this information when we came back for a second hearing, which I don't think was the case. And based on the discussion at the previous hearing, I don't necessarily think that Hearing Officer Munn considered that that was the case, but rather it was factual information that came up for the first time because that was an issue that was more thoroughly considered in the second hearing. So the respondents would recommend perhaps the language in paragraph 21 be changed to sort of reflect that it was just sort of the ordinary course of the first hearing rather than sort of assigning blame to the respondents, as I think the language still kind of appears to do. And we think that keeping the rest of the proposed final decision as is will achieve the goal that the commission said that they were trying to achieve at the last hearing, which is basically putting municipalities on notice that the commission's position is that you can't make these redactions, but doing it in a way that will not do so kind of at the expense of the respondents, who really were, you know, cooperative and did their best at all stages of both proceedings. So that would really be the long and short of our statements on this. And again, we thank everybody for their time in revisiting it.
Thank you, Attorney Scala.
Thank you.
Any commissioners have any questions? Yes,
I just,
Mr. Fizeshi.
Thank you very much. I think you've answered this question in the general, and I would like to ask it in the specific. Paragraph 27, heart of the decision. You said that's reads correctly to you. You used the words, but that you had no objections to the other paragraphs other than 21.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think at the first hearing, we talked a little bit about this. I think substantively, the respondents don't necessarily agree with the overall conclusion that in every instance, redacting non-responsive information of other unrelated calls writ large is inappropriate, as the commission's decision seems to find here. But to the extent that that's the commission's position, which is reasonable, we just disagree. If the commission wants to make that message known to other municipalities, then we wouldn't have an objection to it. The respondent's position is that this probably wasn't the appropriate case to make these findings of fact, but the hearing officer did review the records in camera and reached this conclusion, which he would have done if it were a different case. So I don't think we necessarily have any objections to that material remaining in, if that's the direction the commission wants to go in.
I would like to go. Thank you very much.
To any of the other commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Goldsby-Wells.
So I remember when this came up at the last meeting, I think the revisions that were made by the hearing officer were well done in terms of what we were looking to do. And I think, you know, we were understanding of your position, or at least I believe I was. I think with paragraph 21 and going along with the note about paragraph 27, they sort of have to go together. In my personal opinion, when you look at paragraph 21 in that first sentence, there has to be a mention of the fact that this was the first time it was acknowledged. Not to say that anyone is placing blame, but it is a fact. That was the first time that that information was brought up, which then will bring reason to why the rest of the paragraphs are written the way that they are. So I think for the purposes of what we want to do and what I believe the commission is intending to do, to in some respects put notice on and make it clear that just because that content is overlapping, you can't redact it all. And so I don't think, at least the way that I read it, that it comes across as you did anything intentional. But because that was the first time that that information was conveyed to the hearing officer, I think it's right for them to include it. So I just more so just wanted to put the position on the record that I would agree with the hearing officer's revision for that reason.
I entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, I move adoption of the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hankins, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish?
Yes.
Mr. Fizeshi?
Yes.
Commissioner Goldsby Wells?
Yes.
Mr. Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan? Yes. Passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Next, we move on to docket number FIC 2023-0291, Luz Bueno versus Chair Advisory Committee on Sustainability, Talon Darien et al. Would you please, parties, please identify themselves, starting with you, ma'am.
Bueno.
Thank you. You're the complainant.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Good afternoon, sir. My name is Wayne Fox. I'm with the firm of Curtis, Brinkhoff, and Barrett. We represent all the respondents.
Okay. Would you like to begin, Attorney Fox?
Yes, sir. We have indicated initially we have no objection to the finding.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Bueno?
Yeah. So, I agree with the hearing officer, except on point E, that is, that deny the opportunity to speak during the public comments. As Attorney Fox presented the video of the meeting that day, you have in evidence the video when it shows that when I finally could join in the meeting after it had been inappropriately posted and there had been all the other things that the hearing officer agreed with. I joined the meeting and Ms. Finnegan muted me immediately, the head of the Committee for Sustainability, muted me immediately without any explanation.
I'm sorry, which paragraph do you disagree with? That's okay.
E.
One, 2E?
Yeah, sorry. So what happened at the end of the meeting is even more disturbing. First, Ms. Finnegan claimed that she doesn't know how to unmute me to allow me to speak. Then she claimed she didn't know if I was still there. But as per her testimony, she could see on her screen I was still there. So she lied. Even more disturbing is that then after Ms. Finnegan muted me and claimed could not mute me at the end of the meeting, another member of the board stepped in and claimed I muted myself, like I muted myself. But Mr. Fox told the hearing officer that the reason for the board not letting me speak was technical difficulties. So we have heard three stories about why I could not speak. All the events I described happened the same day in the same meeting. It was not properly posted. The code was not available. They kept the code secret to access the call. They posted that it was in a room when it was really on the phone. I mean, all this happened. And then when I finally joined in the meeting, oh, she muted me. And then, oh, she could not mute me. And then, oh, I unmuted myself. And then Attorney Fox says there was technical difficulty. So you may wonder like, how this happened. And this wasn't an isolated incident. The Committee for Sustainability had inappropriate behaviors in multiple previous meetings.
Was this part of the record?
Yeah.
You talked about multiple meetings where this happened before?
I mentioned the meetings, but they put a rule that day that it was only about this meeting.
Right.
There was a rule that the...
So the only thing you can argue about is what happened at the meeting with the hearing officer.
Yeah.
Not the meeting that you were muted at, but the meeting with the hearing officer.
Yeah,
As long as that's part of what
you're
discussing.
Not the meeting with the hearing officer. At the meeting, yeah, I mentioned at the my closing statement with the hearing officer, okay. I mentioned there was a history, and I mentioned along, but every time Attorney Fox objected because he wanted only to be about this meeting. But so there was plenty what happened at that meeting. So it's not like, but there was nothing that didn't prove itself just from that meeting. So after years of this behavior, May 10th, this is the meeting, they crossed the line. They crossed the line, they push, and that day they pushed too far. So that day, in addition to the meeting not being properly noticed, as the hearing officer confirmed, and that I was denied the opportunity to speak during public comments, the board dropped an item that was in the agenda without any explanation, the swap shop.
It was in the agenda, and during the whole meeting, it's not mentioned. Like, it was never in the agenda. They don't mention why it's not spoken. They don't discuss it. They don't mention why they, nothing. They just drop it. It disappeared. And you may wonder why all this happened and how we got here. And the answer is because I was reporting racist behavior among volunteers at the swap shop. And getting away with entitlement and inappropriate behavior over several years was precisely what led to the May 10th. When any of the members of the committee sustainability tried to address the issue I was bringing up, it was like, not with her. And obviously that day I couldn't speak. Her being me, it was clearly they could not, I didn't have the same rights. So to this day, they have not shown any change in their attitude. The town has remained like they were on the right. Attorney Fox has defended like they were on the right. They did nothing wrong. In front of the hearing officer, Mr. Fox went furious and shouted, I was staining his town, not our town. I clearly don't belong in the town. I don't have it. My rights are not the same than his. And I get it. Change is hard, and minorities have not been part of Darien for many years. Darien had barely stopped being a sundowner town when Mr. Fox became a state representative. Some people in town are struggling with change, so much so that the volunteers have complained of racism for years are still there, and I have presented evidence that they're there.
Mr. Chairman, we've been through this before.
Okay,
this
can
individual
I finish?
Is attempting to raise issues, which even if they were true and they're not, but even if they were true, has nothing to do with what your body does. Racism, she's trying to get this to this body and using the form to present it.
Is this counting in my 10 minutes?
Nothing to do with the issue before the board.
So the focus has to be on evidence that was presented before the hearing officer at the hearing, and this is all about gaining records. So what Attorney Fox is saying is your claims of racism, he's saying they're not appropriate because this is about gaining access to records and information, or in this case, the fact that you were muted when you shouldn't have been muted from a hearing.
Yeah. And
so try and focus on just that, this information regarding this hearing where you were denied access. Please.
Thank you. My point here is change has to happen. We don't need any more false affidavits like Mr. Fox presented. And my teenage daughter testified here. My 17-year-old daughter came to testify here that his affidavit was false. We don't need any more of that. We need change. We need to leave to the next generation inclusion and fair treatment. It is time for younger generation to take over and small towns to change, no matter how hard change is. Not with violence, not with protest, no protest. Here. I mean, this is not easy for me. This is not my first language. This is stressful. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an attorney. And I am here because my kids grew up in Connecticut and they deserve better than this, than what I have experienced. And I feel there's no disagreement. The meeting was not properly noticed. The agenda was not posted. And a lot of incidents that happened that day could not be considered all a coincidence. One thing could be a coincidence, but four cannot be a coincidence. So I was denied the right to speak. They broke the rules. And I respectfully ask this commission to show that even when minorities' rights get violated, there are consequences and people have to pay for it. And I would like to request a monetary fine, even if it is symbolic.
Thank you. Attorney Fox.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think when we had the hearing before Mr. Hyde, one of the exhibits that was presented to him was a transcript or a document evidencing a filming and a recording, I should say, of the entire process. And I think Mr. Hyde took that and did a fine job outlining in his decision what took place and what did not take place. It was all evident to anyone that looked at the tape what occurred. He outlines that beginning in paragraph 21 of his report and going through 22 and 23 as to what occurred. This is not about anything other than what this individual is entitled to get through this committee. It is not an issue of racism. It is irrelevant to make that argument. I am sorry to say that I respectfully suggest that this is a prime example of an individual using the FOI statutes in a manner to abuse towns, to cause towns expenses, to take their employees out of their normal job to come here and testify, paying for an attorney to come here and argue on their behalf. And it has nothing to do with the purpose of this body. I'm sorry to say that, in my opinion, the statutes as they now exist do not provide a remedy for a municipality to attempt to deal with this. The findings are very clear. She was there. She had an opportunity to speak. There was a problem with her machine. They had to terminate the meeting at the end without giving her the opportunity to speak, even though they attempted to do that. Both the chairman did and the other members of the committee attempted to correct her scenario where she was able to talk. On the issues that she likes to present to this committee, they've gone so far as to putting a specific item on their agenda, as it was in this one, that there is the whole issue of what they call the swap shop. We don't bore you to death on that. But that is put on their agenda every time to give this person the opportunity to come and speak. She has had the opportunity to come and speak. She does it on a regular basis and will continue to do so.
I'm sorry, we're not speaking about previous meetings. If we're not speaking about previous meetings, we're not speaking about previous meetings. If I cannot speak about previous meetings, he cannot speak about previous meetings.
Thank you. I appreciate your objection. Sir, was this brought up at the meeting before the hearing officer? Are you talking about facts that are outside of the record?
No, sir. But I'm talking about findings of fact by the hearing officer, which he indicated at that meeting.
So this was part of the record?
Contrary to her allegation.
No, objection. That was not part of the record because we said there was not going to be previous meetings.
I understand your objection. I'm trying to get to the bottom of it. Thank you. So, Attorney Hyde, are you there?
Good afternoon, Attorney Hyde. I was the hearing officer in this matter.
The facts that are being argued, I don't know if you could hear Attorney Fox, he's very soft-spoken. But the facts that are being argued, are they within the record?
I can't recollect whether each individual instance of a swap shop meeting was on the record and whether or not we were allowed to go down all those roads, because there was a lot of objections back and forth. There were a lot of both parties trying to discuss previous meetings, and I had to sort of navigate that. The subject of the swap shop certainly was part of the record, and we went deep into that. So
he's saying that Ms. Bueno was frequently at meetings and objecting or being heard.
There was testimony that there were previous meetings and she had issues with previous meetings, and I kind of tried to leave it at that.
Okay.
Because I wanted to focus on this particular meeting. And I allowed some of that to come in because part of the complainant's position was that she was purposefully stopped from attending this meeting because they were discussing the swap shop and they wanted to discuss it without her. I took the recording of the meeting into the record as an exhibit. I reviewed it. There was no discussion of the swap shop whatsoever. And that was sort of the focus of the swap shop for me, was just the fact that they never even discussed that item.
So I'm going to ask you, counsel, based on that, can you just refrain from talking about Ms. Bueno being in other meetings and objecting?
I would point out, Mr. Hyde is correct. If you look to paragraph 12 of his report,
yes,
there was an allegation that there was an attempt by the committee to discuss things in private without her being there. That they had discussed the swap shop without her being there, which was their intent to keep that product in secret. He deals with that in paragraph 12. The complaint alleged the advisory committee purposely attempted to exclude from the May 10th meeting so that the advisory committee could privately discuss the swap shop. He indicated, having listened to the tape, that never occurred. That was not accurate.
Thank you. Anything further?
No, sir, other than to say that I think that Attorney Hyde did a good job reviewing the tape, outlining what occurred there. It's well written in his opinion.
Thank you. Hang on a second. Do any of the commissioners have any questions?
I don't have a question, but Ms. Wynne, English is not my first language. Is the first language is my children and my grandchildren. So I understand the passion and where you're coming from. The remedy here may not be available, but I'm glad you came and spoke, and I do understand what you're saying you felt and you feel, and it's important for us to hear that. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Well said, Commissioner Kuzeshi. I agree with this, with Commissioner Kuzeshi's comments. Thank you. Do any of the other commissioners wish? Yes. Commissioner Goolsbee-Walz.
And Ms. Bueno, I think, you know, we all hear the passion here. I would disagree with Attorney Fox. While I don't know all of the background, I think we have process for a reason. Everybody is a member of the public and they have the right to use it. I don't, based on what I've seen and heard in this case, it doesn't seem like you're attempting to abuse it. They may not like the words that you're using and what it is you're presenting. I don't know all of the facts and the circumstances, but in this particular case, you know, do what you need to do for yourself that's going to make you feel better. Use the process. That I can't provide any advice to you, but just know I appreciate you using the process, and I think you've done so properly. You may not always be understood, and you may not always be well-liked, but keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much,
Commissioner. Mr. Street.
Commissioner Street, Attorney Hyde, at no point did the in the complaint did the complainant bring up civil penalty?
No.
So, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think that's because there was no civil penalty brought up, we can't even consider it unless we were to remand it back. And at this time, I don't believe that to be a case.
Thank you. And do any of the other commissioners wish to be heard? Great. Thank you. We're going to rule. Is there anything else? Sorry. You all set? Would you like to say anything else?
No, that's thank you.
Say that again.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Attorney Clark. All right, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Street, I move it off to the hearing officer's report.
Commissioner Hanks, second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Is there discussion? Hearing none, I'll take a roll call of those in favor. Commissioner Farish.
Yes.
Commissioner Fuzeshi.
I'm going to abstain.
Mr. Wells.
Yes.
I'm Goldie Wells, excuse me, sorry. Yes, thank you. And Commissioner Hankins?
Yes.
Commissioner Streeter?
Yes.
And myself, Owen Egan, yes. Thank you very much, Ms. Plano. Thank you, Mr. Fox. Passes unanimously. Hope with one abstention. Passes with one abstention.
The man on the left, Wayne.
Thank you. I'd like to take a 5-minute recess, please. I don't know what time it is.